Welcome to the deep dive. Our mission is pretty straightforward. We take complex, sometimes really dense sources, and today we're definitely in that territory with asymptotic statistics, and we try to boil them down to the essential insights you need.
Exactly. And today we're diving into some, well, foundational work by Kim and Pollard on something called cube root asymptotics. It's about the mathematical backbone, really, the proof needed for certain crucial statistical estimators, particularly in fields like, say, econometrics or robust statistics.
Okay, so let's set the stage. Normally, in statistics, we expect our estimators, our best guesses, to get more accurate as we get more data right. And there's a gold standard for how fast that happens.
That's the OPIN-12 rate. That notation, the Atatri, just means convergence and probability. It's tied to the sample size.
And the square root of N rate.
Precisely. It implies the error shrinks really nicely. Double your data points. No, wait, quadruple your data points. And you typically have your error margin. That's what you get from well-behaved estimators, usually thanks to the central limit theorem.
But this dive, it's about something else entirely. A much slower rate, that cube root rate. It's weird.
It really is less intuitive than the square root. Mm-hmm. And it immediately begs the question, our central question for today. Why? Why do some really important, useful estimators seem to hit this speed limit? What's structurally different about them? What are these sharp edge issues that cause the slowdown?
Let's jump right in there, because that difference, that 2 vol versus 13:13 is everything. The classic rate, it assumes things are mathematically nice, smooth.
Right. And this paper, Kim and Pollard, it focuses squarely on situations where that niceness just isn't there, where the limiting distribution isn't what you normally expect. Others noticed this before, like Chernoff, Bickel.
But Kim and Pollard really nailed down the why.
They did. And the fascinating thing is this slower rate isn't some kind of statistical error or failure. It's actually an inherent property of the problem itself. The source calls it the distinguishing feature of these kinds of estimation problems.
So, okay, why the slowdown then? What's the mechanism?
It usually crops up when your estimator is defined by, say, maximizing something or minimizing something based on your sample data, the empirical measure. Think minimizing a function with constraints or maximizing some kind of score.
Right.
The problem is the function you're optimizing, unlike in the classic cases, isn't smooth. It's not differentiable everywhere.
Okay, I'm picturing it. Classic statistics is like finding the peak of a smooth rolling hill. Calculus works great. Derivatives tell you the slope. Everything's predictable.
Exactly. But now imagine the peak isn't smooth. Imagine it ends in a sharp cliff or a jagged corner. That's the sharp edge. Your standard calculus tools, the ones relying on derivatives to find the slope and the peak, they break down at that sharp point.
Because the slope isn't defined there.
Precisely. And that loss of differentiability is what costs you that faster $12 convergence speed.
Ah, okay. That's the key insight. Non-13 happens because the objective function isn't smooth. So let's talk concrete examples. Where do we see this in practice?
Oh, definitely Mesky's maximum score estimator.
No.
It's a classic in econometrics, used for modeling binary choices like, will someone buy a product, yes or no? The function Mansky maximizes is basically a step function, counting things up, inherently non-smooth. And that structure leads directly to this no $13 rate.
And that's critical for policy analysis, right? If you're using that model, you need to know its actual precision, not some theoretical ideal.
Absolutely. The no $13 rate gives you the correct, rigorous way to think about its precision. Another big one is the least median of squares estimator, the LMS estimator.
Used in robust regression.
Exactly. It's designed to ignore outliers. But the way it's defined, minimizing the median of the squared errors, involves an optimization that, again, isn't smooth. It bumps right into this cube root issue.
So these aren't just mathematical curiosities. They're tools people actually use because they solve real problems, like handling outliers or specific choice models. But, okay, how much does it hurt to go from no $12 down to $13, practically speaking?
Oh, it's a big hit. A really big hit. Remember, no alii means quadrupling data halves the error.
Okay.
$113 to get that same halving of error, you might need to multiply your sample size by 8.
8 times the data for the same precision boost. Wow.
Yeah, that's the practical cost you pay for the robustness or the specific structure these estimators handle.
Which makes the theoretical work here, Kim and Pollard's work, absolutely vital. We know these estimators are useful, but if they break standard theory, how do you actually prove they work? How do you handle that non-differentiability mathematically?
Right, that's the core technical challenge. You need limit theorems for the location of that maximum value, the argmax, which we call Hotthetan, our estimate. But the standard theorems rely on those smooth derivatives we just said are missing.
So the usual mathematical highway is closed. They needed, what, a completely new theoretical bridge? Is that a big jump?
It was a substantial jump, yes.
Yeah.
They couldn't use the standard central limit theorem framework directly. Instead, they developed and applied a functional central limit theorem tailored for these empirical processes.
Functional CLT.
And the key insight was that the limiting behavior, after you scale these estimators correctly, doesn't converge to a simple bell curve, a normal distribution.
It converges to something else.
Yes. It converges in distribution to a Gaussian process.
Okay, a Gaussian process. If the classic limit is like a single snapshot, a static distribution, what's a Gaussian process? More like a movie.
That's a good analogy. It describes the entire path, the continuous random function that represents the estimation error process as your sample size grows. It's dynamic.
Interesting. Can we break down the structure of that limiting process? I think the paper calls it ZT.
Yes, ZDT. It often takes a specific form, like ZT frac 1 2 TVT plus WT tel. Let's unpack that.
Please.
It has two main parts. First, that frac 1 TET term. That's a quadratic drift. Think of it as capturing the underlying curvature near the maximum, even though it's a sharp peak. The Valbo-Line matrix essentially measures how sharp that peak is.
So that's like the deterministic shape of the function right at the non-smooth point, the predictable part of the error structure.
You got it. That captures the fundamental shape. Then the second part, $T, is a centered Gaussian process. Often it looks like a two-sided Brownian motion.
Brownian motion? Like random walks?
Sort of, but continuous paths. This $T term represents the random fluctuations, the noise, the stochastic part of the estimation process that's always there in real data.
So you combine the predictable curvature, $T, with the unpredictable but structured noise. That's clever.
Good.
But proving this convergence must have required some heavy-duty mathematical tools, right?
Well, absolutely. This isn't trivial. They needed, first, a way to rigorously establish that convergence in distribution. For that, they leaned heavily on tools like Dudley's representation theorem.
Okay, Dudley's theorem for the convergence proof. What else?
Second, and this is crucial, they needed to control the behavior of those non-smooth functions. Just because it's not differentiable doesn't mean it can be completely wild.
Right, it can't just jump around erratically.
Exactly. So they imposed conditions. They required the class of functions defining the estimator to be manageable.
Yeah.
Often these are what are called VC classes or VC subgraph classes.
Manageable classes. That sounds better than VC subgraph. What does that mean conceptually, like keeping the functions somewhat tame?
That's a good way to put it.
Right.
Think of it as a mathematical guarantee. If your function class is manageable, it means that even with sharp edges, the functions behave uniformly enough, they're stable enough for the limit theorems to hold. They also rely on things like stochastic equicontinuity, basically, ensuring the process doesn't fluctuate too wildly for small changes in the parameter.
So they swapped out the need for smoothness, for differentiability with these other strong conditions, manageability, equicontinuity.
Precisely. They built a robust toolkit that works for a whole family of these non-standard problems, as long as the underlying functions meet these criteria.
Well, that's a huge contribution to statistical theory. Not just solving one problem, but providing a whole new framework. Hashtag TechRee, application deep dive and synthesis.
Exactly. And to see it work, let's look at an application they highlighted. The Shorth estimator of location.
The Shorth thumb. Right, that one has a history, doesn't it? It goes back decades.
It does. Goes back to the 60s. The Shorth thumb is defined as the average of the observations within the shortest possible data interval that contains a certain fraction, say half of your sample.
A robust measure of central tendency.
Yes. And Kim and Pollard showed, generalizing earlier work by Chernoff, that this estimator fits perfectly within their framework. It follows cube root asymptotics. It's a key example validating the whole theory.
And going back to that limiting process, ZO1 TVT plus WTT. You mentioned the Vival matrix captures the sharpness. What else does it tell us?
That Vival matrix, the second derivative matrix of the limiting function, is absolutely critical. The whole asymptotic theory working relies on Vival being positive definite.
Positive definite. Why is that specific property so important?
Because if $5 is positive definite, and assuming the noise term DWT doesn't just cancel everything out, it has non-degenerate increments, it guarantees that the maximum of that limiting process, ZAT, occurs at a unique point.
Ah, so it ensures we're actually estimating one specific value. If the maximum wasn't unique, the estimator would be useless. It wouldn't converge to a single answer.
Exactly right. That positive definite condition on $5 gives us consistency. It ensures the whole procedure hones in on a single meaningful parameter value.
Okay, connecting the dots then. This work provides the full package, defining the conditions for these non-smooth functions, manageability, developing the right limit theorems, functional CLT, identifying the limiting process, Gaussian process with drift, and proving convergence to a unique point using properties of Vidalers.
That's a great summary. They effectively replace the classical reliance on differentiability with this more sophisticated machinery involving strong approximations and these stability conditions like equicontinuity.
And the result is foundational. It provides the rigorous justification needed to actually trust and use estimators like Mansky's maximum score or the LMS estimator. Tools that are incredibly useful, but were, perhaps, on slightly shaky theoretical ground before because classical theory just didn't quite fit.
It failed them, yeah, because of those inherent sharp edges.
So the big takeaway for you, the listener, is this. Kim and Pollard's work didn't just show these estimators work, it provided the correct way to measure their precision. It confirms they are consistent, but it also confirms that their best possible convergence rate is indeed none $13.
That's the crucial point. They established the correct mathematical footing.
Which circles us back to the practical side. This research proves that sometimes that top tier N12 precision is simply out of reach because of how the problem is structured. You have to accept the slower none $13 rate.
And that slower rate, as the sources note, it requires more delicate handling. It has real consequences for how you design studies or analyze data.
Absolutely. If you're doing policy modeling, analyzing large data sets using these robust methods, you can't ignore this. You have to account for that slower climb to precision, which leaves us with a crucial question for you to consider, especially if you rely on these kinds of models. Given that none $13 convergence demands significantly more data for the same level of confidence compared to Dentin Alive, how should your practical procedures change? How much bigger does your minimum sample size need to be? How do you adjust your confidence intervals? How does it impact the budget and feasibility of your data collection when the math is solid, but the precision is fundamentally limited?
It forces you to really think about that trade-off, doesn't it? The trade-off between getting the robustness these estimators offer versus the slower convergence speed. It's a critical balance to strike in practice.
A really fascinating and technically demanding deep dive today. Thanks for navigating us through the complexities of cube root asymptotics.
My pleasure. It's important foundational stuff.